Alston Valencia, welcome to the Thank God for Bitcoin podcast.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
So this has been somewhat of a long time coming. It's been a few weeks since we first chatted. I'll just let you introduce yourself and then we'll kind of go from there.
Yeah, so my name's Halston Valencia. I work in marketing for Adam O'Brien, who is a CEO and founder of the Bitcoin Well. He also co-founded GetBase, which is a medium production company in the Bitcoin space. And Jordan and I got connected, probably about a month ago over Twitter, but I had actually been following this podcast for a little bit by that point. So full circle moment, and just so excited to be here.
Yeah, that was wild. So you had this tweet thread that went absolutely insane. I just checked the numbers on it. 529,000 impressions, staggering. So again, that's kind of when I reached out to you and then found out that you were a fan of the podcast. So let's just start there. How in the world did you find the podcast, and what was your initial level of interest there?
Yeah, so the podcast was actually introduced to me by my boyfriend, who found the podcast through a friend who was wearing a Thank God for Bitcoin t-shirt.
No way.
Yeah, it's a crazy story. So I guess he was at the Santa Monica Bitcoin.
Okay, yeah.
That outdoor event that they do. And he met this guy, I think his name is Ryan, who was wearing.
No way. Shout out to Ryan. Let's
go. Yeah, Ryan from Newport, which I'm from Newport. So small.
No way.
Yeah, so Ryan, I guess, was wearing the t-shirt. And my boyfriend went up to him and was like, hey, I love your t-shirt. And they chatted it up.
That's so funny.
Yeah, then that's how I learned about the podcast, started listening to it. And then they actually, I think, both were at that Saddleback Church event.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, recently. Yeah. So that's how I heard about it and have been
listening. Great. Okay, now, again, we're going to get a little bit personal here. So was your boyfriend a Bitcoiner when you guys met? Or was this did you precede him, or did he precede you in Bitcoin?
Yeah, no, he's been a Bitcoiner, I think, for a while. I don't know the exact time period, but he's been into it for a while, and we've been kind of on this journey together. So it's
cool.
Been great.
Now, we're going to talk about kind of what you're up to now. Is he still based in California, or is he? Okay.
Yeah.
He's a long distance.
He's back in OC. So we're doing long distance, and it's a little brutal, but actually I'll be in California next week. So super.
Okay. Cool. My wife and I were long distance properly long distance dating for a year. So we know how that goes. But okay. So again, we want to hear, you're here on the podcast. I want to hear your Jesus pilling moment. So, you're a believer. This is just, I was super, surprised and encouraged. Obviously on this tweet, if you haven't seen it, let me just pull it up here. I've got it. Your big viral tweet. Let's see. You've got on your, I don't know what the name, what do you call this thing that is on your, that you're wearing, this red.
The sash.
Yeah. You've got this giant cross on there, which is awesome.
Yeah. I know. I love that SC does that. You can kind of make it super personalized, but.
That's so cool.
My faith is a huge part of who I am, and, I wouldn't be anything without Christ and his redemption. So I thought it was super important to make that known on my graduation day. But so I started going to church when I was 4 years old. I was raised by a single mother. So my mom kind of was raised in a Hispanic household. So very Catholic. They went to Catholic church pretty much every week. And then she, as an adult, got older and realized Catholicism never really felt right to her. So then she separated from my dad. My parents separated, and she realized when I was four, I can't do this without God. And so she started taking me to church when I was four. And then I, ever since, grew up in church. But you know how it goes. I went to all the Christian camps.
Yeah.
I went to Christian schools.
Yep.
I was super involved, and I kind of just, it became very repetitive, and I just, it didn't feel like it was my own faith at the time. Until about probably high school, I realized I am so lukewarm. I'm not really bold in my faith. And this all just feels like it's just not my own. It feels like I'm doing this because this is just how it's always been for my whole life. And I was kind of in this Orange County bubble. I don't know if you've been to Orange County.
It's, yeah, a little bit.
It's beautiful, but it's such a bubble sometimes. And there's tons of churches. So I realized it was about either junior or senior year of high school, starting to get pretty rough. And I was like, I need God. I can't do this anymore without God. And so I started going to a new church, started going to a new high school group. Shout out Compass Valley Church in Aliso. Pastor Rod, that was his name. He had such a strong impact in my life because he was the one that really inspired us and encouraged us to not just be lukewarm, but to be on fire for God. And it was during that time where I started like really taking my faith seriously and kind of like rededicated my life to God, because I had accepted Christ, I think, as a kid, probably about 5 or 6. Mm. But I think it takes living a few more years in life to really fully understand it. Because I think when you're little, you just, at least for me, I just didn't want to go to hell. It took some years of struggles and understanding how good God is and how sinful I was to fully understand like the gospel. And so, I was about 17, 18 when I rededicated my life to God and decided like, no more of living in this lukewarm environment, no more of just going through the motions. And like, I want to actually go out and spread the good news. And yeah, that was kind of my moment. And then I got to college, and that was like such a shock in and of itself, because I had gone to a Christian high school, was kind of in this like very sheltered environment. And then—
Wait, are you suggesting that USC is not a sheltered Christian environment? Is that what you're—
Yeah, totally. So, you know, then, you know, college brought up upon its own set of challenges. And I think I really leaned onto God, you know, even more in college than I did in high school. And, you know, there was temptation everywhere. I mean, it's such a secular environment. And, that was kind of my Adam calls it the white pill moment.
Let's go. So where was your mom? Like, you know, as you're in the later years of high school, I have a very similar story, my faith in high school, but so like, as that's going on, kind of where's your mom at? Like, what is she thinking about this? Is she kind of—
Yeah.
Again, there's a stereotype about Latina moms, you know, where like they're kind of all up in your business. You know, we lived in Uruguay for 7 years. Uruguayans aren't your typical Latinas in that like very expressive, open, louder way. But you know, what was your mom's role in all of this? What did she think?
No, I think the stereotype is there for a reason, right? It's very, very real. She was adamant about, you know, taking me to church and ensuring that I was always in youth group and attending small groups, and she always provided to, you know, put me in like a sound Christian school, sound Christian church, and always paid for me to go to these camps. And so she was really hoping that, you know, I would have that breaking point. And I think she had been praying a lot for me. And obviously as a single mom, she was working a lot, so there was only so much she could do to raise me well. And I think, she was wise in that area and knew that it would be best to keep me in that Christian environment. And I couldn't be more grateful for that. But yeah, as a Latina mom, she was she was always a little hard on me. But, and then my dad's Brazilian, his whole side of our family. So it's just like chaos sometimes. But love it. Wouldn't trade it for anything else.
Man, that is a lot of Latin passion going on there. My pastor is Brazilian, so
it's.
So, do you ever get chased with the chancleta? Does she ever, you know, can you imagine?
Yeah, I mean, when I was little, it was like a joke, but like she can like whip it up pretty quickly. Like, I don't know how. Like this woman like never played sports, but like when it comes to the chancla, so athletic.
That is hilarious. Okay, so real quick, so this is a random question. How old are you?
I'm 23.
23. Okay. For some reason, I thought I remembered 19, but again, I was like, did you graduate early or what? No, 23. Okay. You're good. So when you're in college, I know there's some like there's like Reformed University Fellowship, I think is like one on-campus ministry that is pretty, pretty common within California. Were there some things on campus that you found, some organizations on campus there at USC that you found helpful, or was it just more getting involved with the local church or something along those lines?
Yeah, there was one ministry that was pretty popular called Crew.
Crew, yeah.
Yeah, Crew was pretty popular. I only attended like a handful of crimes, but yeah, I was more so involved in my local church. And
cool.
I went to Mariners in Orange County for years and loved it there, loved that college ministry that they had. I mean, it was pretty big. I want to say like about 100 to 150. Okay. And now their entire young adults program has grown probably five times that. And so
yeah.
I found that getting involved in my local church was far more beneficial for me than attending like the university ones.
Yeah.
I think too, part of that was some of the university ones were like secretly LDS.
And oh, really?
It was like very, very undercover. Like,
yeah.
Like they didn't have like their
little badges and stuff.
Yeah, their badge or outfit. It was like low key. Yeah. And so I didn't realize until like probably the second time that this was like, you know, Church of Latter-day Saints.
It is, man. It is something that I've noticed this a lot. I found on I think it was on Facebook. My boomerism is showing. But I was on Facebook and found there's some group that was like doing paid ads. And like it sounds just normal evangelical. And then you start to just realize like, wait, this sounds weird. And then, you know, just some of the language, you're like, oh, this is a secret little Mormon. They're like, this is a secret little, they don't want to call themselves Mormons anymore. But that's totally what this is.
I think I've seen those ads. Yeah.
So, okay. So what was, I mean, again, there's a lot that's said, a lot that's been said about there kind of being like a Gen Z. Who's younger than Gen Z? There's another one. What are they called?
Gen Alpha.
Gen Alpha. Okay. So like there's been a lot of discussion I've heard online about there being like a greater receptivity among like Gen Alpha and maybe some Gen Z, like two spiritual things. We've gone through like a period where like secularism was rampant, and I'm sure, you know, at a public school in California, or is USC private? I guess it's private.
Private, yeah.
But still in California, I'm imagining you can find any, you know, wild thing under the sun in terms of things that people were into on campus. But like, did you know, I don't know, what was kind of your impression of maybe, you know, what is your impression of your generation and, you know, throughout your time at USC? Was it something where you kind of sensed there was like an increasing spiritual hunger or spiritual, you know, willingness to consider spiritual things? Or would you say it's still kind of maybe not as much?
Yeah. I think, you know, with schools like USC and UCLA, all these big schools in California, I would say majority of the student population is desperate to be on the right side of politics.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when I say right, I mean like the left.
Yeah. The correct or, yeah. You know, the cool side of things.
Yeah, the correct. Yeah. Yeah. Not literally like Republican, but I think in my experience, I unfortunately didn't really feel like there was a ton of peers or people in my classes that were believers or even really curious, but I did find that the ones that did make the effort to go to these groups like Crew were super passionate. I mean, they were desperate to just seek Jesus. So it was kind of just like two opposite ends of the stick. There wasn't really like a middle ground.
My wife was an English major. And so I don't know if you had any friends who were English majors, but she was in just very, very dark places, you know, some of these classes and some of the things that they're talking about. And so, again, she saw very clearly there was, you know, she had some friends who were Christians, and it was kind of like you would either go, you know, you were either lean into being a Christian, endure all the scorn, just stay strong and, you know, continue to just basically be unapologetic, or you would just conform and just fold like a cheap, you know, cheap chair and do that. And she just basically kind of experienced both. I can just imagine that, you know, being in the fire, being put into the fire is going to have one of two very different, consequences, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm so encouraged to hear that it was more of your local church than it was a college ministry, because it's just such a, again, there's lots of things that can happen in churches and people can have bad experiences, but when church is done well, and when you have like solid people, like there is nothing like it on earth. Like there's not any kind of college thing that can even hold a candle to it, in my opinion, just because, you know, so much of the temptation is, you know, among younger people and even among older people is just to kind of stay with your own people of your own age or your own culture, and not have to deal with the difficulties and some of the inconveniences of having a multi-generational church and some of this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And yet it is such a blessing when you have a church where there is multiple ages represented, multiple stages of life represented. And I just think for so many people, they just miss out on that. So again, just to hear that you were in a good church situation, did you have some of that dynamic within the church, some multi-generationalism, or was
definitely.
It,
you know, okay. Yeah. I think my home church was, you know, Mariners Church. If to those watching, if you don't know, it's kind of like a more, I wouldn't say it's a mega church, but it's a pretty big church. I mean, it's pretty well known in Orange County in LA. And there's, yeah, it's multi-generational. Mm-hmm. I think in LA that the reason why I didn't really attend church too consistently in LA was because most of the churches were like probably 18 to 25 range.
Okay, yep.
And so exactly. It felt like a church that was just made specifically for college students.
Yep.
And like I enjoyed one or two services, but I really preferred the multi-generational church that I was attending. And yeah, I think like what you said, like there's something super valuable and beneficial to having like the older generation kind of mentor the younger one. And I think that's really important, especially in the faith. And as we're, you know, young kids trying to figure it out and grow, I think that's critical.
Yeah. Okay. So thank you for sharing that, first of all. But let's hear your orange pill moment here. Like, how did this happen? You mentioned, it might've been before we were on the call, but you mentioned, you know, that you have a boyfriend who's also into Bitcoin, but how did you come to, you know, hear about Bitcoin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. So let's run it back. So I was a business economics major in undergrad.
Yeah.
And my senior year, I had a professor who recommended the book Broken Money by Lynn Alden.
Let's go. Okay.
Yeah. But it was, I mentioned this on Coin Stories, but it was very subtle. There was like some fear behind like recommending it, which was, now looking back, like it
over
sense. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Like fear as a professor. He was like, hey guys, so there's this book. And you just like quickly like went, like glided right past it, you know, like, anyway, like personal recommendation. I think you guys should read this. And I really respected this man. And so I read it.
Yeah.
And I think the first time I read it, I was like, whoa, okay, this is kind of interesting. And then it took me reading it a second time for it to really click.
Yeah.
But you know, during that process, I kind of forgot about Bitcoin and was just like, okay, you know, focused on my studies my senior year.
Excuse me. Sorry to interrupt you. How long ago was this?
This was my senior year last year.
Okay. Last year. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, because I graduated in 24. I guess this was in the fall of 23. It was when the book came out, I remember. So
Okay. Would
have been fall of 23.
Cool.
Was when I read it. And then kind of forgot about it. And then I read it a second time in 24. And that's when it like really clicked. And I was like, okay, whoa, this is so interesting. And then, I kind of just got really intrigued, started reading. You know, like I read Saifedean's books and then found a bunch of podcasts. I found Natalie Brunell, Dvack Mallers, and, you know, all these big names, and just immersed myself into this world. And then earlier this year in January, I was finishing up my graduate program at USC. Okay. And I started simultaneously working full time. And I was like really feeling the pain of the broken financial system. And so, you know, 6 months into the job, I made a decision to start looking for a job in this space and decided I wanted to be a part of the movement that I think is going to change the world. And so that was kind of my orange pill story. So then I resigned from that marketing job and now working for Adam and Bitcoin Well.
Shout out to Adam. Shout out to Bitcoin Well. Yeah. Well, cool. Okay. So then you mentioned your boyfriend is also a Bitcoiner.
Yeah.
So this was, what was his story? How did he get involved?
That's a good question. His story, I think, is kind of similar. I think he kind of discovered Bitcoin after college. He's a couple, almost 2 years older than me. So he graduated before I did, but he had a family member, I believe, that was a Bitcoiner.
Okay.
And you know, if my boyfriend's listening, I hope I'm getting this story right, but... I think it was a family member that was a Bitcoiner and then like mentioned it. Our internet connection is kind of poor. Can you hear me?
Some technical difficulties.
There we go.
Hey.
Oh my gosh. Can you hear me?
I can. No worries at all.
Okay. I don't know what happened. It just, everything disconnected.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
Is it still live?
Yeah. We're still live. We're still going. Just everyone had to stare at poor at me for the last 5 minutes. But
sorry,
no worries,
everybody. I'm not sure what happened.
Sorry, everyone, for having to stare at George. Yeah, no. So, all right, where were we? We were discussing. So, you were talking about your boyfriend.
Yes.
Yes.
So his Bitcoin story. So I believe he had a family member who was into Bitcoin and helped orange pill him. I don't know what that conversation was like, but yeah, that's kind of what I know. And then he actually has a cousin who works for Robert Breedlove. So kind of a Bitcoin family. Yeah. Yeah. Which I actually just found out like more recently. But yeah, that's his story, and love that I found that this podcast through him and Ryan's t-shirt.
So wild. Yeah, because obviously Robert was one of the authors of Thank God for Bitcoin and is an investor in TGFB. So it's a wild story. Okay, so you guys have Bitcoin in common. I'm trying to think what else we have. So obviously you post this thread, you out yourself as a Bitcoiner. The response is, just from my side of things, insane. I mean, 529,000, 539, however much it is, over 500,000 impressions on a thread. You know, I'm sure this was, you were not expecting.
No.
Anything was magnitude.
I was expecting like 15, 20 likes, yeah. That.
So you're not a plant. You're not like a fed plant. Is that what you're saying? You know, this isn't...
Yeah.
The CIA is not trying to, you know, this is not a PSYOP. You're, you know, raising your level of prominence. Okay, good. I'm glad to hear.
No, I think I had like maybe like 100 followers when I tweeted that. So yeah, was not expecting that response.
Yeah, you've increased about over 5,000 followers and, you know, been on with a friend of the program. Not really, but we do know Natalie Brunel. So been on Coin Stories with her. But yeah, so I mean, this is your profile is kind of blown up. What are some of the other podcasts you've been on? I remember seeing a couple of
Coin ones. Stories, and then I did a live stream recently with Tim Kotzman just the Bitcoin Treasuries.
That's right.
Digital conference, and then he has the Unconference coming up in New York. And I recently filmed with Bitcoin Journeys. That one hasn't come out yet, though.
Okay.
Cool. And then now here, Thank God for Bitcoin.
Love it. Man, here we are, the pinnacle.
It is.
The peak in terms of importance. So you're working for Bitcoin Well right now. You're doing, you're Adam's assistant. What else are you working on? Are there, you know, other than your day-to-day stuff, not that you need to if you're not working on other stuff, but are there, you know, future going projects that you've got, you know, an iron in the fire, or is this something where right now you're just trying to get your feet under you with Adam and you know, learning and working on that role?
Yeah, I think, you know, my main priority is working for Adam and all of his marketing needs. And we're really trying to grow that brand. And we just launched a show yesterday called The Adam O'Brien Show, where we're focusing on Gen Z and we're focusing on helping them understand Bitcoin, financial markets, economics, truth, full freedom. And like our mission is to inspire the next generation to reclaim their freedom. That's our main goal. And so that's been kind of the priority right now. But I think, you know, weekends I like to focus on passion projects and focus on things that I'm super interested in and I think will help the next generation. So yeah, I have some exciting things in the works, but
let's go.
Yeah. Yeah.
We won't ask. We'll wait and be patient, but we're looking forward to hearing about those. So all right, so we do have I put out a little bat signal or a little Halston signal on Twitter to basically ask people if they had questions for you. We do have one. Let me share this. So this is Ryan Finley, who's one of the co-hosts for the To the Unknown pod that we record. Ryan has this question for you. So what are the biggest barriers? This goes along with what you're talking about with your work with Bitcoin. Well, what are the biggest barriers that you're seeing with Gen Z and keeping them from saving more? Is it discipline, lack of financial education, high time preference? I'll just add another couple. Overwhelming student debt.
Yeah.
Just not being able to get jobs that are making money. And then what's kind of the response you've had from talking about Bitcoin with your peers? So I guess we'll stick with the first couple up there and then we can go to the second one.
I think biggest barrier, I mean, for me, I just graduated, and to be frank, I did go to a private university. So, you know, I'm right there. I got student debt, and, you know, my boyfriend does too. Most of our friends have student debt. So it's unfortunate because we were sold this lie that if you went to college and, you know, well, okay, let's start with, we were encouraged at the ripe age of 17 to take out massive amounts of loans to fund an education that doesn't actually teach real world skills. These universities are centers for, they're centers for ideology, really, secular ideology. And I think, you know, if I knew then what I know now, I would do everything so differently. But yeah, I think one of the biggest barriers is student debt. It's wages are not keeping up with inflation and how expensive everything's gotten. I mean, it's the reason I'm in Austin, to be frank.
Okay, yeah, I was going to ask you that. Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, LA and Southern California has gotten way too expensive. And even in Austin, the locals are telling me the rent here has gotten very expensive. And as a Californian, I think it's cheap, but I guess to the locals that this is not normal. But rent, you know, we're spending, Gen Z, I think I saw a stat the other day, spends 51% of their paycheck on rent. And so when you're living paycheck to paycheck, it's, I don't even think it's about discipline anymore. It's just, you simply are struggling to make ends meet as is. And then when you do have some extra, you know, money to spend on entertainment, or that's probably what you're going to do. It's high time preference. You're not thinking about long term. You're not thinking about the future. And I actually think that the more people, the more Gen Zers and millennials that get into Bitcoin and start to see hope, I think the more we'll see people really start to want to start a family. Because right now, I think a lot of Gen Z, they're not interested in starting a family. And I don't think it's that they're not genuinely interested. I think it's that there's not a way to start a family. It's gotten simply too expensive. And we could even go on a whole tangent on healthcare and how expensive that is. And so it's just a big broken system. And I'm forgetting what the second part of that question was, but I think.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, we'll stick here for a second. I do think, I mean, one of the things, when we lived in Uruguay, Uruguay for almost 7 years, and I mean, there, what it felt like when I got into Bitcoin while we were there, and then just coming back to the States, like really what it felt like, I felt like I traveled through time. I was like, I've seen the future of like kind of where the United States is going. And one of the things that was common there was it was totally common for people to live with their parents till they're in their late 30s. And get married in your late 30s, early 40s, and then kind of move out. And because, I mean, the whole time, real estate was so expensive relative to your wages and stuff like that. It was just very difficult to get to a place where you can afford to live on your own. And then, you know, people wait longer to get married because they want to be settled in their career. They want to have actually, you know, resources. And so it really was something that was very difficult and has this delayed, this prolonged adolescence in a lot of ways. And so, yeah, I can totally see that, totally see that being something that, you know, is going to happen. It's going to be more common here as people reckon with, again, to your point, it's cool to hear you own up to it. Like, you know, you made the decision to go to college, like, you know, nobody twisted your arm, but it's still, I just remember the first time I found out that student loan debt is the only kind of debt that you can't declare bankruptcy with. And it's just staggering that at 17 years old, you can, you know, be shackled with hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of debt. You know, you can't even legally fight in a war. You can't legally own a gun. You can't legally drink, but you can legally take out crippling, you know, lifetime levels of debt. Like, it's just, it's so offensive in a lot of ways. The other side of the question, let's go back to that. Where was it here? Here we go. The other side of that question was, what's the response you've had in talking to your peers about Bitcoin?
Yeah, I think right now it's difficult because a lot of my peers still categorize it as crypto. Yeah. And so they see it as like, number go up and that's all they care about. But it's hard to like sit down. Like, you have to really be intentional about sitting down with someone and explaining like the entire broken system. I think that's kind of the initial step that's the hardest is helping them understand, because it's humbling, because, you know, you spend 4 years studying economics and business and finance, and then all to realize like we haven't even been taught the truth. It's so ironic, because I feel like Bitcoin taught me more about sound money than years of economic lectures ever did. You know, you're not really taught about the consequences of monetary debasement or why we have the Fed. And, you know, it's almost like, they, like, when I was in college, at least, like, my economics professors were thankful for the Fed. And, you know, it's a whole different world.
So Is the exception this professor who recommended Broken Honey?
Definitely. Yeah. I think, you know, I never got to take any of Nick Batia's classes, but I hear he's phenomenal. But yeah, I think this professor was the exception. And even then, like, I think there was a fear of somebody ratting him out and coming after him. And
yep.
I think universities are deliberately designed this way to produce employees and into a system that is feeding itself rather than the individual.
So have you talked to him after the fact? Like, is he like a proper Bitcoiner, or is he, where's he at?
I'm not sure. I reached out to him, but I didn't get an email response back. So I'm not sure. But yeah, if he's happens to be watching, I would love to, you know, have a conversation with him. But I think when you're a proper Bitcoiner, you're bold about it. You know, the same way that I try to be bold about my faith, I'm also bold about the orange pill and helping people understand why they are experiencing such pain in this system.
Yeah. Yeah, man, it is one of these things. I mean, do you think that, I mean, in your, again, to follow up on the question about you, your conversations with your peers, do you think like unit bias is a real obstacle for, you know, for younger people who are just getting in, who don't have a lot of expenditure income to necessarily put into, you know, into something like Bitcoin? Is it, you know, the fact that people are like, oh, I can only buy, you know, 1/100th or, you know, like 0.0001 Bitcoin or something like that. Do you feel like that is a harmful thing?
I do feel like that's part of it. I also think that, like, you know, in my college, my undergrad education, we were, we were really encouraged to invest in the S&P 500 and, you know, the stock market and you know, all that and HISAs. So I think it's just when you've been taught something for so long, even in high school, I remember in my economics high school class, like we were taught the same thing. And so I think, you know, you hear something like Bitcoin and your initial response is just to be skeptical. Yep. And so I think, you know, yeah, I think it's just, you've been taught something for so long that you're like, oh, you can just buy like a small portion. You don't have to buy a whole coin. That doesn't really like click to them.
Yeah. There's so many people. Again, it's just one of these things where the same type of thing can happen in Christian circles where you can be so insular in Christian circles where you just spend all your time listening to Christian podcasts and listening to sermons, all this kind of stuff. And there's just so much, you build up like this level of knowledge and information. There's so many things that just get second nature to you that for other people just are not understood. And so this question of you don't have to buy a whole Bitcoin, I run into people who think that all the time. It is people for like, hey, I don't have $100,000. It's like, dude, you can buy $10 worth of Bitcoin. You don't need to. So what is your, you know, I guess, you know, moving along here, what is your experience in Austin been like?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say it's so different from California. That's for sure.
What are the biggest differences?
Biggest difference, I think just life here is a little slower in general. Okay. LA is a little bit, I used to think LA was slow. But now compared to Austin, I know, I think Austin is a little bit slower paced. You're like 7 out of 10 people I meet work remote from home. So
really? Okay.
It's just like a very relaxed lifestyle, which, you know, I work remote too, so I've been enjoying. But I think biggest thing is I just miss the ocean, miss the beach.
Got it.
But yeah, Austin, everyone has been so, so friendly. And I got to go to the park the other day, the Bitcoin park.
Oh, cool. Let's go.
Shout out Jack Lesser. Yeah, he's the GOAT and he's been kind of running that with Rod and they're killing it out there. And so, yeah, I love the Bitcoin community here. It's super strong. And I was wearing a Bitcoin hat the other day and had like 10 people compliment it. So never happened in LA.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm guessing, so you just moved there a couple months ago?
It was probably about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. 3 weeks ago. Okay. So Marty would have already been gone by then. Marty moved away. Man, so many good shout to Parker Lewis, shout to Paul Miller, friends of the program. Man, who else is there? Matt Snow. Have you met Matt yet?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, Matt's the man. Matt, he was working for, Trammell Venture Partners. And then he plays at the,
from TVP.
Okay, cool.
Zach Young. Shout out.
Okay. I don't know. I'm not familiar with him. Matt plays the guitar. So a lot of times at the meetups, Matt will play like the national anthem on his little guitar.
No way.
He's the man. But yeah, it's so many good people in Austin. I'm just trying to think, have you been to any meetups yet?
Yeah, I've only been to the event at Bitcoin Park the other day, but other than that, haven't been to any like Bitcoin meetups. I was planning on going to Lit Devs this week. They do the Lit Devs and Bit Devs, but couldn't make it.
What is Lit Devs?
I think that's the one where they focus on like all things Lightning related.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Got it. That's
next. But I got to go to ABDC, the design one. That was fun.
That would have been Paul. I think Paul leads that. I'm pretty sure.
Sahil?
Paul. I know Sahil too, but yeah, I think Paul, I know he shared I saw him tweet about it the other day. I don't know if he was actually there, but.
Okay.
Paul's a great guy. Fellow believer as well.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay. So, other things, what else is going on? I guess, in terms of things that you're reading, things that you're thinking about in the Bitcoin space, what's been at top of mind for you the last month or so?
Yeah, I think top of mind has been like, I've gotten a lot of great feedback on, well, one, they don't really see like a lot of women in this space. And so that's kind of been, something.
Wait, what? You're telling me this for the first time?
Yeah. Gotten lots of messages saying that people are excited to see more girls in this space. I don't know how to take that. Sometimes there's creeps.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I was like, RIP your DMs when your thread went viral. You poor thing.
Yeah, it was. Some of them were really disturbing. I had to close the DMs and then I opened them back up now. But for a while it was like asking for feet pics, like just
things. No way.
Yeah. Ugh. But from the non-creeps, I've gotten lots of great feedback and they love to see the younger generation get involved in Bitcoin and try to progress this movement. And I think that's kind of something that's been like top of mind for me is like, how can we get more Gen Zers and the next generation too, even to be interested in this and understand like all of the flaws in the system? Because, I look at all of my peers, I look at my graduating class and it's like, maybe one person understands Bitcoin like wholeheartedly. And I think this is so sad because this is such an opportunity. The boomers had real estate. I think we have Bitcoin. And so I would hate to see my loved ones and my closest friends miss out on what's going to change the world. And I think I really see this as a moral economic movement. So, that's really what's been top of mind and just happy to be working with Adam and on the new show to try and help that movement and that message.
What's the name of the new show?
The Adam O'Brien Show. It started yesterday. Every Thursday we'll be live at 6 p.m. Eastern.
Is there, who are you guys, what kind of, are you guys patterning the show off of like something else that's out in normie world? What style is it?
So every week we'll focus on a topic. Yesterday we did how Bitcoin fixes time preference. And so we'll just provide like some really interesting staggering stats. And then he kind of just talks about, his thoughts and how Bitcoin changes things, and his goal really is to help the next generation question things and think more critically. And so, that's what we'll be doing every week. We'll have a new topic and
cool.
Go free to subscribe.
Love it. Go follow him. Is there a specific Twitter handle for the show itself or no?
No, just at Adam O'Brien underscore is his handle. And then on YouTube, it's just the Adam O'Brien Show.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, somebody else, have you met Ella Huff yet?
I have. I love her. She's great.
Yeah. How did you guys meet?
I think it was just she reached out. She messaged me. Yeah, there she is. Love her. Hey. We'll be at BTC in DC and let's go together. Yeah. A Gen Z panel moderated by John Balcom, I think is his last name.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, she just reached out and then I saw what she was doing at the Cornell Bitcoin Club and was super intrigued in her research and her paper. I would love to read the whole paper, her whole thesis. But yeah, that's how we got connected.
That's great. Ella's great. Her mom, Lisa's, is great as well. I'm in a philosophy class with Ella. There's like this Bitcoin philosophy class that I think there's like 12 or 15 of us in there. There's not a ton, but we ended up in there, just found each other in there and hung out at the Vegas conference and.
Oh, awesome!
But yeah, it's been super encouraging. I mean, she's just somebody else who, again, just like going hardcore in the paint, trying to help Gen Z understand Bitcoin. And
she is, and she's killing it now with Strategy starting soon.
Oh my gosh, yeah. That was wild, brilliant, sure. Brilliant on their part. Get on the ground floor of Ella's career because, there's few people. I mean, she just is a go getter to the nth degree.
She is, yeah.
But okay, so beyond that, I'm just trying to think. So that's what you're working on. Where is Bitcoin Well at these days? It's been a while. I mean, I've seen them with like Adam's posts and stuff like that. Are they still, they're operating in the United States?
They're based out of Canada. They're in Edmonton, I believe, is where the headquarters are at. And that's kind of where Adam works from, but he is doing a lot of traveling. He's going to be at quite a few conferences coming up. Yeah. So now he's kind of doing the remote thing. And I think they're trying to become more of a remote company. So I guess we'll see. I did hear, I don't know if I can say this, but I did hear he wants to open another office in another part of Canada. But yeah, okay. Still Canadian company. Love Bitcoin Well. I buy Bitcoin from them. And yeah.
Cool.
Self-custody is key, right?
Yep. Man, yeah. Again, there's very few companies that you can just like full-throatedly recommend, but I've never heard any bad thing about them whatsoever. Adam's been in Bitcoin since 2012 or 13. I mean, all of his stories about running money, like flying across the country with lots of cash in order to be able to
load up crazy ones.
Bitcoin ATMs. Yeah, you got some wild stories.
Yeah, he's the most debanked man in Canada. Yeah, you cannot have a bank account.
Yep. Yeah, go find that video. He just posted a video about it the other day. It was really good. Yeah. So what are some of the other things? I mean, are there, when you speak to either, depending on who they are, like what are some of the arguments that you found? I mean, again, a lot of us, the having success orange pilling people happens fewer and farther between than we would all like. But have there been specific arguments or, you know, specific issues that when you talk about those things, you find people being more receptive than other things?
Yeah, I think what works for me is I had a friend the other day I met at a health and wellness event who happens to do marketing for Coinbase. And
oh, no way.
Yeah, okay. It was totally random. I think it was a God thing. But she was asking me about Bitcoin. She was like kind of lost. Like she works more so on their like digital marketing and social media sector. So she doesn't really have to like understand Bitcoin too well. But she understands crypto, but has never really done studying on Bitcoin. And so she was asking me about it. And the way I explained it to her was crypto, like you take, you know, say whatever random token, like they have a paid marketing team. They have people like you who are out here advertising these coins, advertising all of these altcoins. There's no supply cap and there's not really like, it's not as verifiable. And so I think what worked with her is she was super intrigued when I told her there's a 21 million supply cap. There's no CEO. There's no corporate office. There's no employees. It's a network of people that are coming together to work together and follow these set of rules. And I think helping her understand that was key. She's kind of been on her own Bitcoin journey now. This was about 2 weeks ago. And so we've kind of been chatting, texting back and forth. And she's been really interested in uncovering the truth behind like the Fed and just the broken system that we're in. And like, oh my gosh, are they encouraging us to take out student debt? Like, is this intentional? Like, why is it that we can do that and now be in six figures of debt, but you know, you can't drink till you're 21. Like it's, they're preparing, you know, it's like, it's so ironic. You graduate with an economics degree or a finance degree and you've already failed on day one after graduation. You already have all this debt. You're already not on the right track. And so I personally think that's by deliberate design and it's breeding employees, not free thinkers.
Yeah, 100%. So that was in Austin. You guys met. You met here. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we met at a health and wellness event, and she happens to work for Coinbase Marketing. So, very interesting.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So we have another question for you here. We have somebody else. So this is this is my buddy JD. JD is behind the account Cypherpunk Cinema. He's worked in a long time. Worked in Hollywood, worked in producing some of the most well-known shows in the world, and done a bunch of ad work for Apple, Toyota, a bunch of companies. But he has this question for you. Here we go. So, and again, you can agree or disagree with this, but Gen Z has grown up with a different mental paradigm than the rest of the world. What would you say are the biggest markers of the Gen Z paradigm, and how does this make it, does this make it easier or harder for your generation to understand Bitcoin?
Yeah. Wow. There's a lot to say on that front. I think, and I feel like I can say this because I'm a part of Gen Z. Our generation is soft. Very, very soft. Everything has become about me, the individual. I think we can see that by, you look at cities like LA and New York, and like when I was in university last year, there was a protest left and right and people throwing fireworks at our beautiful university buildings. Everything has become so, it's become so distorted. And I think this generation, unfortunately, has become so brainwashed with, media and just following, the things that are so far from the truth. And I think it's tough because I think when a majority of people think like that and they're, I think at the core, these are just people that need Christ. They don't have a community. They don't have a relationship with God or any other spiritual being, if you will, something that they believe in. They don't have that. And so they look towards secular things like, that you could say like the LGBTQ plus community, or maybe they look for like a very niche, like gaming community, or they're looking for these things to just feel like they're
wrap their identity around. Yeah.
Yeah. There's such a lack of identity in Christ, I think, ultimately. For the entire world, I think that's fair to say. But specifically with my generation, there's a lack of identity in anything. And so I think that becomes an issue because then, if you are questioning the system and you think differently than a majority of the university, you're not likely to be inquisitive or to be obsessed with curiosity. You just want to follow the crowd.
Yep.
And so I think that's the biggest struggle, because if a majority of people are against Bitcoin, my generation, Gen Z, they're not going to be interested in something that goes against the norm.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the biggest struggle. Thankfully, here in Texas, I feel like it's a more receptive community.
Yeah.
Especially within Gen Z and millennials. But, back home in LA, it was challenging for sure, because, everyone just sees Bitcoin as crypto. And that's all.
Was it something, this is a whole, I'm sure we could go, this could go a lot of ways too. But so you were in college during I don't know what's the YouTube approved way to describe this, but the Rona event, you were in college for that. What was, I just seeing from afar, it just seemed like, the amount of pressure, the amount of fear, the amount of, all of these things. What was that like? And do you think that, do you think that is something, do you look at that as like a Gen Z 9/11 moment in terms of like the effect that it had in a lot of ways, or how do you, what do you think about that?
Definitely. I wasn't born, I was born after 9/11. So you could say this was our event. But, my senior year of high school, I actually didn't have like a graduation because that's when COVID started.
Wow.
And then my, going into that fall should have been my first year of college, which I did do. It was all online.
Okay.
I didn't go in person. All the universities, at least in California, were completely shut down.
Yeah.
And so, I didn't, I think that was a, it was a crazy moment. It was like an inflection point. I think the world just completely flipped upside down. When I got to college, I remember feeling so weird. I felt like everyone was just so different. People forgot how to socialize. Like it became like wrong to ask a question, you know? Like, and so, I think, the Rona, I don't want to get us banned on YouTube, but...
We're not going to be losing a lot of money, even if we did get demonetized. Yeah. So don't worry about it.
The thing that happened in 2020, I think it really changed the world. And specifically, I think it hurt Gen Z in a lot of ways, because I think we came out of it so different, and few stood their ground and remained true to their morals. But I think after that is when we really saw like the decline in humanity, and you saw all these people protesting, and just, you look at that. And I remember... I think it was last year or the year before in college, I was at school and there was a protest and they were like, barricading the doors to the lecture halls. And it was like, you look at something like that, I was like, I don't think that would have happened, you know, 5 to 10 years ago. It would have been like so different. You would have been, you know, kicked off campus and you can't do stuff like that. And now we live in a world where that's completely acceptable and it's encouraged. Like I had professors that were like, class is canceled. We're going to the protest.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's insane.
Gosh, man. Yeah. And again, I'm sure. Yeah. The California schools, that would be even a more, I mean, just a different level of challenge than, you know, some of the more red state colleges. I'm sure, again, it's not that it's not an issue because those people, you know, people who share those beliefs are still on those campuses, especially. But yeah, I can just imagine the difficulty. And I really do feel like it's like they, some of those, like the you know, left wing, you know, and just like fear mongering that went on, like they might have won the battle, but they are by far losing the war. You can win through force and oppression in the short term, but it's going to be short lived, especially when the curtain gets pulled back on just how wrong and how ridiculous a lot of this stuff was. I think they've done irreparable harm to their, to the attractiveness of some of their, to their movement in large part because of how they reacted during those years. Which again, it's like, again, you never would choose to go through that again. None of us would ever choose to endure it. But listen, if the consequence is that, you know, a lot of people get woken up to and are now it's like this reverse. There's almost like this pushback where, I mean, again, you saw it with Trump. You saw with a lot of, you know, like Trump being elected and a lot of things. There are people who would never, ever have voted Republican, would never have voted for Donald Trump 4 years before that, who were willing to consider it just because of how insane things got in some of the places where they were. So,
I do love to see that. I think in LA though, it got worse. Like people just got worse. I remember like one of my last weeks in California, the amount of times I heard this phrase is just absurd, but I was at a coffee shop and there was like a homeless person outside the coffee shop. And I told the barista something about the homeless person that I was, you know, expressing some fear. And the barista says, well, we shouldn't classify them as homeless. Like, it was just like, you're walking on eggshells and it's like, how am I supposed to tell this person about Bitcoin if I can't even say, like, what am I supposed to say? Like, person of questionable housing status. Like, it would, like, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to tell you. Like, this
potentially unhoused person. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, yeah, it's gotten so bad in California.
Yeah. We were talking about this on, it wasn't super recently. It was probably a couple months ago, but just talking about how, I mean, part of the problem with a lot of the left's approach to language is the purpose of language is to enable efficient communication between people. Like it's designed to be a neighbor loving innovation because again, we have common terms that allow us to communicate in efficient ways without needing to take the time to explain every single thing. And now like when language for there's a whole humongous segment of the country who views language as this tool of self-expression. And they basically turn language, rather than being something that's outward and others focused, they turn it to it so it's focused on them. And then they get offended over every little infraction.
Yeah.
There's now all these grammatical sins that you can commit for which there is no grammatical salvation and redemption. Like it's just like if you sin against me, then you're canceled forever. I'm going to work to destroy your life. And so it is really this really depressing and again, just impossible way to live ultimately. And it's exhausting. And I think that's kind of what you're expressing is, it is exhausting to live this way.
It was pretty exhausting. And I think, you know, that's why discovering Bitcoin did wonders for me because it revealed a community where people actually think critically. And I was just like longing for that. Like my final year of college, I don't feel like I really had any peers that could think on their own. Like everything was just like, well, if this doesn't fit the narrative, then I'm not going to say that I believe in it, or will I question it? And so, and that's part of the reason why I'm in Texas too. Like I think a lot of people here are more open to having like, you know, a normal discussion without any fears of backlash or being canceled.
Yeah.
Whereas in LA, like you just can't have those conversations.
It really is something. It really is something that you like the consequences of living for long periods of time in an environment like that. It's unhealthy. It really is. Cause it changes you. Like the culture that you're in really, it really does. It can't, there's your culture can promote freedom and it can promote growth and, you know, subsidizes other healthy, you know, healthy, interactions, or it can do the opposite of that. And, I again, good on you for going to find a bastion of sanity where you don't have to be afraid of getting canceled over, you know, using the wrong word. I guess we're coming up here on an hour. Again, if you had somebody, you know, what would be some of your recommendations or something, you know, if you've got people who are listening, I think the vast majority, we do have some Gen Z folks. In fact, again, we can talk about this after the podcast. Again, I don't know if you're going to be at BitBlock Boom, which is going to be the Bitcoin conference in Fort Worth in early April, but it's Gary, the Bitcoin Boomer does lots of, it's a great conference. One of the best Bitcoin conferences. We're going to be doing a TGFB event the day leading up to that event. And if you're around, we'd love to have to do a panel with you. I got two other Gen Z folks who I'd love to have on the panel. They're friends of two of Ryan's kids, Ryan Finley, Moses, who's a programmer, helped Marty build out
Marty,
build the opportunity costs. And then his other brother, Elijah, has been making some of the videos. I saw you share one of the videos, the gold standard. He just made one of those for Marty as well for TFTC. Would love to have you guys come on and talk about and do a panel and just kind of talk about your experiences and just give some hope to Gen Z. And again, this is something that, you know, I really think that especially the like Christians, it can be a place where we can shine in this respect, where again, we have this multi-generational appreciation rather than multi-generational frustration with each other, where we're just constantly pitting the generations against each other. I do see this kind of positive interaction with Bitcoin, which is one of my favorite things about the community. But I really think this is something that, you know, we can, especially as Christians, we can do this well and you know, be an example and a model in this way. So we can talk about the specifics of that later. But but for maybe for somebody as a takeaway from this, what would be something that you'd want to leave them with, you know, about Bitcoin, about your faith, maybe something you're thinking about and been, you know, reflecting on in that respect. You know, what's something that you'd want to leave people with?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, so many people in my generation who, you know, don't really have a relationship with God say like, oh, I'll do the whole God thing when I'm old. Mm. I've heard that countless times. And I, you know, my encouragement to you is my life has been completely changed since I started really leaning on God and spending time with him and, you know, diving into the word. I think I always say like the Bible is his love letter to us. Mm. And it's a guide for life. And I think if you are just going about life with no like North Star, you're bound to get lost and feel unfulfilled. And so I think that true identity comes from Christ. That would be my number one encouragement is find God and find put your identity in him. Mm. And you know, when it comes to Bitcoin, I think outside of Bitcoin, like I said this on Coin Stories and I'll say it again, learn like your freedom depends on it. And I think being obsessed with curiosity will do you wonders, and especially in a time of AI and we have all the tools and abundant knowledge online free for the most part, like just learn every day, learn something new, listen to a podcast. But I think ultimately, like at the end of the day, following God and developing a true relationship with him is critical to living a fulfilling and successful life.
Amen. Yeah. And that is one of these things where I do think we can, especially as Christians in the space, like we can be super exuberant about Bitcoin. And I think rightfully so, right? Cause we can, you know, it's not impossible, but it's one of the things where we can more easily see it as again, a very good tool, in working towards a larger end. And I do think that is one of the, and I think it's one of the roles that it's one of the reasons why God has put us here is because it is easy to just maximize Bitcoin, as if it is an end in of itself rather than a means to an end.
Yeah.
And so again, I think you're seeing, I've seen dozens of people, for whom Bitcoin was an on-ramp to, you know, to other spiritual discussion. And so again, sister, it's great to have you as another, you know, another soldier in the trenches to help people who are in that situation. So Halston, thank you so much. I really appreciate you. And hopefully this will not be the last, your last appearance. We'll have you back very soon.
Well, thank you for having me. Love to see what you guys are doing on this podcast.
Awesome. And again, thank you so much, Halston. We'll have you back. And again, thank you to all of you guys who are listening and watching. If you're sitting here, if you're watching this on YouTube, like and subscribe. This is a way that we can help more people find the content. Go follow Halston on social media. You can see her Twitter handle is right there below her name. And then if you're watching this on Twitter, like us, follow, share. Anything, you know, small things like that add up and make a big difference. So we're grateful for you, and we'll be back on the next episode of the Thank God for Bitcoin podcast.